Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Smell Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boateng. This week, join me for an interview with journalist and author Paola Totaro. Paola and I chat about her personal experiences dealing with both anosmia and parosmia. Her new book called On the Scent, Unlocking the Mysteries of Smell and How Its Loss Can Change Your World. What inspired her to write the book? Why people with a sense of smell should care about smell dysfunction, and much more. Our interview was recorded the week before her book was published in the UK. If you're interested in reading the book, it's on sale in the UK as of June 23rd, 2022, and should be on sale in the US within the next few months. I'll include a link in the notes on how you can purchase it if you're in the UK. All right, let's listen to the interview. Hi, Paola. Welcome to the Smell Podcast. How are you doing today?
Very well. Thank you so much for having me, Katie.
Thank you for joining. So to get started, can you please introduce yourself to everyone? Where are you from? Where do you live now? And what do you do?
Okay, so I am a bit of a mix. My name is Paola Totaro. I was born in Italy. I grew up in Australia, and I now live in London in the United Kingdom. I came to London because I'm a journalist, and I was posted to cover Europe for the Sydney Morning Herald and the Melbourne Age, which are the two Australian broadsheet newspapers. And I arrived in 2008. And when my newspapers said, come back to head office, by that stage, I'd fallen completely in love with London and decided to go freelance. And my husband and I reinvented ourselves here in the UK. So quite a crisscrossing of the world, really.
That's amazing. I really enjoy England. I was actually born there myself. I don't know if I've ever told you that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, on an Air Force base. So lived there until I was about two and then moved over to Idaho. But I've been back to England and it is very beautiful there, especially London. I just really like it.
It's very green, isn't it? There's something remarkably sort of gentle about the countryside too. I really love it. But then again, I'm also close to Italy, which is where I was born and where I still have family and I think where my heart probably lies. So,
yeah. Do you speak Italian? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I do. I actually learned English in Australia at school as a child. So English is actually my second language, believe it or not. Oh, although I obviously work in English, so I express myself more easily in English these days.
That's interesting. I remember I studied abroad in Costa Rica, and by the time I was leaving there is when I actually like really started speaking the language. So I definitely needed some more time, but I always thought maybe one day if I start dreaming in Spanish, then I'll know I really, really get there. So do you, just random question, do you dream in Italian or in English?
That's a really good question. I don't know that I know whether I dream in a language. I'm going to have to answer that question at another time when I've had a dream. Yeah, I actually don't remember about my dreams that often, to be honest.
Yeah. So what brought you into the world of writing? So you work as a journalist and now you're doing freelance and you've actually become, you are an author now of a book, which we're going to talk about today. But what got you into writing in the first place?
Well, when I left school, I enrolled to do arts and law at the University of Sydney. And by my third year, I understood that law was simply just not something that I wanted to do. And I decided to take a year off. And in that year off, I worked for a little media company in Sydney that was growing. And serendipitously, I wrote a funny piece. Well, I thought it was funny at the time, probably isn't now, but about the cliques at university. And my boss sent it off to the Sydney Morning Herald, which is the broadsheet, as I mentioned before, and it was published. I had no idea. It was a huge surprise and very exciting. And from there, I was offered what was then called a cadetship, which is a three-year training program for if you're an undergraduate. And so I fell into journalism. But within a year, I knew this was what I wanted to do. And I had always written as a kid. I read a diary. You know, I wrote a diary. I loved sort of the English part of school, certainly not maths. Maths wasn't my thing. I've been really lucky. It's a career that I fell into and I adore. And in the end, I suppose at my ripe old age, I've got a bit good at, maybe. I hope.
That's awesome. So yeah, we are speaking specifically today because you recently published a book. It's coming out soon on June 23rd in the UK. And the book is called On the Scent, Unlocking the Mysteries of Smell and How Its Loss Can Change Your World. So what inspired you to write this book?
Well, I was on the on March 27 at about 4 o'clock, so I never ever forgot that. I will never forget the moment that it happened. I think UK had been in lockdown for about a week, and I went to the bathroom to wash my hands for the millionth time, as we'd been told to at the beginning of the pandemic. This is 2020, you might remember. And I used a hand cream that I really love. It's a very powerful smell of geranium and bergamot root, and it just really very beautiful. And I couldn't smell a thing. And it was sudden. It was literally from one moment to the next. Because I remember I smelled the soap, which was matching, but the hand cream disappeared. It was like a light going off. And so I scrabbled in the bathroom and smelled everything I could. There was nothing. I then put my nose in bleach, and we all know what bleach does to our trigeminal nerve. And obviously that was completely, there was nothing. And so from that moment, I, as a journalist, I've been covering COVID in Italy. Italy had, you know, Italy had just, or Northern Italy had just gone into lockdown in Lombardy. And I had traveled to Italy previously, and I just became unbelievably curious and increasingly panic-struck, really, about what was happening. So concurrently to me covering COVID, I started to research what the hell was happening to our noses in that terrible period. And so that's how the journey began.
So you remember exactly the moment when you lost your sense of smell. So at that moment, had you already, I'm assuming it's from COVID, is that right? So did you already know that you had had COVID, or was that your indicator that you had had it or that you were sick?
At that point, the UK wasn't testing anybody unless they had a specific group of symptoms and they were respiratory. However, I had, because I'd been covering in Italy and because I have an intensive care specialist brother in Australia, I had been reading more for these for the coverage in Australia, and I'd started to hear anecdotal reports of the loss of smell. And so I knew immediately, because I'd had a bit of a cough, I'd traveled, I'd been in a I'd also done a trip across England on foot in the middle of winter. We did Hadrian's Wall as a trek, my husband and I. And so no, I wasn't really sick, but I'd had a rotten cough. And it was about 5 days into that I got the anosmia. So it had to be. I rang the GP, I was fobbed off. Oh no, it's not a symptom, but I isolated anyway because I had read enough to know that this was potentially a symptom and I didn't really want to carry it around the neighborhood or into work, etc. So
So what was that like for you when you lost your smell? What did you do?
Honestly, I was truly devastated. I don't think A, there was the fear of what might happen next because we didn't know about COVID then. We certainly, you know, it was the earliest days of COVID. So we were starting to get reports of people dying, and I didn't know. Now I knew that I had to have COVID. It couldn't be anything else, but we weren't being tested. So we didn't really, I really just didn't know what might happen. So it was a mix of fear about the actual disease and also the absolute devastation. You know, a week or so later, when I realized that I wasn't getting really ill, the total devastation of the world turning black and, you know, it just seemed like color drained out of everything. I couldn't, you know, we're allowed to walk the dog. I walk my dog. I always smell the flowers as I go. I love the scent of just rain. I've constantly smelled in my life. It's been part of my stories. I've gone back over features that I wrote when I was, you know, on a ship between Libya and Lampedusa. You know, there was a refugee ship that was going down, and I started the story with smell. It's clearly really driven the way I write, and I found it really debilitating, actually, really debilitating.
So now what is your like current ability to smell? Has it returned for you? Has it been distorted? What has that been like for you?
Well, it's now 2 and a bit years, obviously, and I think my sense of smell is pretty much as acute as it was. What happens? I mean, I went through a period of strange parosmia where fragrances foul turned to fragrances sweet, and vice versa. But I didn't get the terrible parosmia that many other people did. But the thing that I still struggle with is that I don't immediately recognize smells that I don't have an immediate visual cue for. So for example, I live in a terrace, sort of narrow classic London house, multi-storied, and so sometimes when you cooking smells come upstairs, and I will know that the smell is familiar, but I can't put my finger on it. And so I have to ask, or I have to go down and see what's being cooked, or what, you know, what it is. So I think the connection between the receptors are working, but there's a clear, there's still work to be done, or my brain needs to do work with the connections between the bulb and the brain, and that recognition aspect, which I find quite fascinating, actually. I'm constantly exercising it and questioning it, and you know, trying to sort of track how it's working and getting better.
Absolutely. So you lost your sense of smell. You were already covering COVID, for the work that you were doing. So covering COVID cases in Italy. Then you lost your sense of smell. And then eventually you decided that you wanted to write this book. So what led you to that decision? When did you know that you were going to write this book?
Well, it was interesting. It was about a year into it, maybe 10 months, 11 months, when I knew I was recovering. I decided to write a newspaper feature for the magazine, the weekend magazine of the paper that I worked for. And in writing this, it was about 3,000 words, you know, the length of a normal kind of newspaper magazine feature. And by the time I'd finished, I thought, oh my goodness, there is so much more to be said. And at that point, I'd interviewed some really interesting people just for the feature. I'd interviewed the founder of Absent in the UK, who you know well, Chrissy Kelly. I'd interviewed a professor of philosophy who's an expert in perception, Barry Smith. There were a number of people that I'd really tapped into. And I thought, there's too much here. I need to expand on this. So I had a talk to them all, and they all agreed, you know, that it was a moment in history where olfactory science and understanding of the poor cousin of the other senses was in the spotlight. And so I wrote a proposal for the book, and kind of winged it, really, and sent it to an agent. Well, I sent it to my husband's publisher, my co-author, and they actually didn't want it. And that made me even more determined. So I found an agent, and the agent loved it, and it was sold to the lovely team at Elliott & Thompson here in the UK within a week. And I was pretty much writing starting in March 2021, and it was handed in by August 2021. So wow. It was a very, very quick baptism of fire in the knowledge, in the journey of science of olfaction.
So let's dive into that a little bit more. So what was the research and writing process like for you when you were writing on the scent?
Well, you know, it was one of the great joys, I suppose, or when I say great joy, perhaps if there was a silver lining in COVID, it is the fact that it really set aside among the chemosensory scientists, the perception flavor scientists, that set aside normal academic competition and drew them together. And the digital world, the internet, obviously allows that. So in the middle of the pandemic, as you know, and you've covered in your podcast, the GCCR started to work together. There were ENTs that were working together all around the world. And all I did was literally find them either through Twitter or through their university email accounts and ask them for interviews. And so while I interviewed and went straight to the laboratories of the people at the cutting edge, then I was behind the scenes, I was reading every research paper that was being published or pre-published on MedArchive. So it was an immersion, a deep immersion, but I was very much the recipient of great intellectual generosity from all these scientists, because they spent time with me on Zoom, like you are, explaining, talking me through, answering my questions, and allowing me to do what I do as a journalist, which is to take very complex issues and try to simplify them so that they're both understandable and hopefully entertaining for the reader. Interview and reading, that was pretty much it.
So what was it like working with your co-author and husband?
Well, a lot of people ask us that. So my husband is a biographer. He was a journalist. We both worked at the newspaper, so together. So we've actually worked together in the parliament when we were covering politics back in Australia. We've shared an office. We really have just worked together. We've co-authored a book together before. And because this book needed to be done quickly, I really believe that it had to go with the flow of the zeitgeist, and while there was interest in smell, and we had to seize the moment. He just said, look, I'll help you. And he obviously, you know, with 14 books under his belt, he was integral to keeping me going, whipping, keep going. If I thought it was a mountain, he would divide it into little small steps and help me psychologically. And then, of course, he did some fantastic work discovering things, reconstructing things about the politics that was happening in the UK at the time. He discovered that, you know, probably the most famous of the romantic poets in the UK, William Wordsworth, who most people would know as the author of the great poem Daffodils, was anosmic, had no idea. There's, you know, he was just fantastic as a colleague and co-journeyer.
Hi everyone, I want to tell you all about an exciting opportunity which I have personally participated in before. My friend from Falk Aromatherapy, Frauke Gallia, runs the 21-day Jumpstart Smell Training Program, which is a habit-building program designed for acquired anosmics, hyposmics, and parosmics. The next program starts on Monday, July 11th. It is an email-based program so that it can easily be integrated into your schedule and daily life. And importantly, it allows you to be located anywhere in the world to join. You'll get your daily email first thing in the morning. The program includes pre-program setup support and guidance, e-journal and workbook to record progress and stay motivated, 21 days of inspirational emails, an optional smell buddy to help keep you accountable, and 3 recorded motivational mindset coaching videos from Frauke. Plus, you'll also receive free re-registration to future smell training sessions for ongoing support and motivation if you like. So once you're in, do as many future sessions on Frauke as you want. I've done the program before and it's excellent, so make sure to click on the link in the episode notes to sign up now. Yeah. So one thing that I'm very excited about for your book is that we actually spoke. We did an interview together, and I believe your husband spoke with my husband. So
yes.
Yeah. So I'm very excited for everyone who's listening. The book will be out again, June 23rd. Currently, I believe, Paula, can people order it from the UK if they live in the US?
I am hoping that just after I hang up from you, we're having a meeting with a small publisher in New York. And if that small publisher in New York does what I hope they will do, then American readers will be able to get it, you know, from a US source. The reality is that with the book market, they do try to protect their markets. And so it was the Commonwealth, UK, Australia, New Zealand that the publishers here bought. And they don't really like to distribute into another market that's not theirs. So fingers crossed, Katie, that I'll have some nice news for you. Yeah.
Well, if you do, definitely update me. And so I can share with all the listeners, but that was a great interview when we chatted. And so I have a small piece within the book, which is really exciting.
Well, it was integral because, you know, I started to listen to the Smell podcast in the lockdown walks. And I would take my dog, put my earphones in and listen to you talk to so many interesting people. And of course, listening to your own experience. And so when I was writing the book, it seemed a natural thing to come to you to talk to you about your experience. But then it was really quite lovely because both our husbands had to become our noses. And so, in the book, there is the story of people that live with people that have lost their sense of smell and how they help us and how they, you know, help navigate the world when, you know, you're missing a little bit. So I think, it was, I'm very grateful to your time and also to your husband, I have to say. So thank you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We're very excited to get our hands on the book whenever it becomes available. So definitely I'll also share with everyone who's listening. We have a lot of UK listeners that they can get it get their hands on it right away. And then when it gets published in the US, which it will,
fingers crossed,
we'll get our hands on it too. So when you were going through this whole research and writing process and you were speaking to a bunch of different people, scientists, people in the industry, you mentioned speaking with Chrissy Kelly from Absent, which is a wonderful nonprofit over in the UK. If people haven't heard of it by now, definitely take a look at that. What was your most surprising thing that you learned about smell?
Do you know, I think that I knew about retronasal olfaction, and I think I knew in theory that our noses are incredibly important to the way we perceive taste and flavor. But I didn't realize the huge distinction between taste and the tongue, in other words, the five things that we perceive on our tongue, and the fact that the nuance of flavor, that, you know, the zing of lemon zest, or the, you know, that those nuances of spices and seasonings, they come with our nose. And to learn about that and to experience, to learn the science, but also to experience it yourself, how difficult it is to adjust to the loss of that nuance of flavor, I think was probably the thing that has stayed with me really the most. I mean, I had some extraordinary experiences too in the research. I mean, I spent a week with Thomas Hummel in Dresden and did a week at his summer school. And, you know, I've not been in an anatomy lab, and I've certainly not, you know, before held a human brain in my hands, which I did. And, you know, I was able to see the olfactory system in life, on a cadaver, and to see the intricacies and the tiny nature of these incredible organs that allow us to perceive our world in the way that we do. To pinpoint one thing, I'm not sure. I think the whole journey was quite an eye-opener. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I can tell definitely speaking with you that smell has become something that's really important to you. And I think people who have lived experience with dysfunction, it definitely becomes extremely important since you understand exactly how much it impacts your day-to-day life. So one question I have for you is, why should people pay attention to the sense of smell even when there's not a problem? So people who can smell, why should they care?
Well, you know, that was another really powerful message that I learned, and I get across in this book. And that is that the sense of smell is so much part of an intricate network, neurological network that we humans have. And it has and can be a really important sentinel for health. So my dad has Parkinson's disease, and it's very well managed, but it wasn't until I wrote this book and we chatted that he told me that 10 years before he had the onset of symptoms, the tremor and the things that come with Parkinson's, he'd lost his sense of smell. Mm. And then, you know, in Dresden, I spoke to a specialist in Parkinson's. And of course, it is really a very important thing to be followed up, because if you medicate prior to Parkinson's symptoms becoming apparent, i.e., for example, if you report anosmia, your outcome is much, much better. Mm. So, you know, and there are other diseases that where smell can be a portent of something that may be coming. Now, nobody should get panicky that this is the case always. It's not, obviously, but it really should be investigated. If you go to the GP and you say, my hearing's a bit, I can't really hear the same way I used to, the GP will send you for tests. And right, that's what should happen mm-hmm. with your nose. Same with mental health. I mean, there are links between olfactory bulb size and volume and depression. And we don't know which one goes first. It's chicken and egg. Yeah, but again, mental health and smell are, particularly for some people, they're profoundly intertwined. So yeah, really important. Take it seriously. Take your sense of smell seriously, and make your doctor take it seriously. Mind you, I'm telling you, this is what you've spent so much time talking about with such energy and eloquence.
Oh, thank you. I do find it interesting. I've learned that myself as well, that there's a link between depression and anosmia. And again, people aren't quite sure. Are you depressed because your sense of smell is diminished, or are your smell diminishes. You know what I mean? Like which one, like you said, which one comes first and why is it linked? So there are some things that are so important about smell that it baffles me, and probably you now too, why it isn't paid attention to. You mentioned Parkinson's. We're talking about also indications of depression. I know that it's also linked, like diminished smell can also be linked to Alzheimer's.
Exactly. And early onset dementia and very important diseases that if medicated early and if lifestyle changes can be made, can be alleviated. So it's really, really, really important. I agree. I mean, the issue with depression is a really fascinating one. And I sort of go into that in the book because the one thing they do know is that people who are depressed and who have been tested and had their olfactory bulb measured, the volume is lower. But if they are a patient who has responded well to cognitive behavior therapy or to drugs therapy and their depression is lifting, then the olfactory bulb volume increases. So there is no doubt that there is a link. But as you say, chicken and egg, we're just not sure, you know, what comes first or whether there's just a link.
Yeah,
you know.
Absolutely. So another question for you about the book is, what do you hope it will accomplish for the smell and taste community? And that's a big community. So let's ask specifically, what do you hope it will accomplish for the patient community?
I think, Katie, that the thing that I would very much like is that I have given voice to patients as much as I've given voice to science. So the book is interlaced with memoir, in other words, my own experience, but it's also interlaced with the experience of people that have lost the sense of smell through traumatic brain injury, people that that lost it through virus, a wonderful philosopher, professor in Spain who explained what it was like to be born without smell and who explains perception of, you know, what it's like not to have smell, not to ever have had it compared to other people. It's full of the voices of people that are living without their sense of smell and that who perhaps have not had that voice in the way that I think they should. Mm-hmm. Because there's lots and lots of material on people that live without sight, without hearing, and less so without, you know, less so without smell. So hopefully it fixes, hopefully it does that. And then secondly, you know, the question you asked me before, I would really like it to be flagged as a sentinel for health. In other words, it's the canary in the mine. It tells us that something's not right. So let's, if it's left you or if it feels wrong, go and get it checked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the goals of STANA, the Smell and Taste Association of North America, one of our long-term goals is that we would like to advocate for universal smell testing. And I think I've said this before on other interviews, but I find it fascinating because I had my son last year, April 2021, and within 12 hours of birth, someone came in with a hearing test and stuck electrodes on him and checked his brain waves to make sure that he could hear. And I was thinking to myself, we really need that for smell as well, from very young, but also even not necessarily as a newborn, but maybe even like kindergarten. Because in the United States, at least, when you go to school, they check you for both vision and hearing again. You just go down to the nurse's office, I can remember, and you do like an eye exam quickly on the chart. And that's just what you do. So I would love for everywhere in the world for it to also be common to test smell. Because a lot of people that I've spoken to with congenital anosmia, they don't figure that out until they're like 7, 8, 9 years old.
Yep. That's a very, very common thing that I heard from congenital anosmics, that sometimes it took even longer. You know, there were a couple that didn't really, the parents just didn't get it really. And it was until they were 11 or 12 when peers started to ask questions. So I absolutely agree with you. Yeah. And in fact, you know, I when you asked me earlier, one of the things that was astounding in this research was I didn't realize that the fetus can smell. So it's within the second trimester that they will start, the system starts to develop, but a child whose mother, for example, in experiments ate aniseed a lot, which is quite a powerful sort of fennel smell, at the minute they're born, if they're given the smell of fennel and aniseed, they turn you know, and route towards the smell because it's familiar. So it is a really, it's the first system that develops before hearing and sight. And so it's absolutely, I think, essential that it's tested, as you say, at very, very early age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So how can listeners get their hands on a copy of On the Scent?
Well, if they're in the UK, at or any all the bookshops that are online or at any bookshop, and it's certainly for sale Amazon, and it's actually on sale already. So pre-orders are always a joy for publishers, and then I hope in the next day or so to give you the good news that that a publisher in New York has bought it or is taking it on and will sell it there. And then in that case, it'll be really easy. It'll just be online sales, unless you're in New York or a big city, I think.
Perfect. And this episode will actually be coming out on June 28th. So it'll be right after, about 5 days after your book publishes. So everyone who's listening, make sure you go check out all the places that you usually buy your books so you can support Paola and this really important work. So do you have any final things that you'd like to add? Any final thoughts?
I think that I really, really hope that, that this period, incredible period in medical history, gives us a silver lining. And that is that smell is no longer what, Sophie-Anne Barwich called the Cinderella of the senses, but that she gets right in the limelight and that smell becomes as talked about, as important, as valued as the rest of our senses, because I think it's really, really important, and I'm very sad to devalue it in the way that we have sort of historically, I guess.
Absolutely. And finally, my question for you is, how can listeners follow you or get in touch with you online?
I'm always really open to email. So it's my name, paolatotaro60@gmail.com, or on Twitter. I think I'm just P_Totaro. I'll send them to you, Katie.
Perfect.
I have a website if you're interested in my journalism, should you be interested in the other stuff that I do. And on Instagram too, I've got a funny handle, which I'd have to spell for you.
That's fine.
On the word journalist in Italian. I'll send them to you.
Yeah. When you send me the links, I'll make sure to include those in the episode notes for everyone listening.
That's great.
I just want to say thank you for your time today. And then also just thank you for writing this book. The more focus there is on smell in the world, I think the better the world will be.
Absolutely. And thank you for all the work you do. And thanks for being part of the book. Katie, do you have a electronic copy in the meantime?
I do. Yes.
Well, good. Excellent. Just to make sure
excited.
That they've sent it. Cause sometimes things
slip to dive into it. But when it becomes available in the US, I also will get my hands on a hard copy as well.
That's fantastic. Well, in which case I'll write I should write in it for you. So.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. That would be great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Paola. Thank you for joining today. And
thank you for your time.
Everybody check out the links in the episode notes. Thank you to Paola for coming on the podcast and sharing her story and her new book with us. If you're interested in following her online and purchasing her book, check out the links in the episode notes. I'm very excited that a small part of my own story is represented in her work, so make sure to check it out. The Smell and Taste Association of North America is the first patient organization focused on smell and taste disorders in the USA. To find out more, visit Stana's website online at www.thestana.org. Stana is an official 501c3 nonprofit, so any donations are tax deductible. We're still fundraising to help all of us with smell and taste disorders, so please donate on our website if you can. Check out the latest series of programming called Stana Live Sensory Insights on Instagram, where we interview people from the world of taste and smell. You can visit our Instagram page to view all of the previous interviews, and you will also now find Stana on YouTube. For any questions or if you'd like to get involved, please visit the website or email us at info@thestana.org. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the Smell Podcast. Reviews are helpful because they allow others to find the show. And if you'd like to financially support the podcast, you can do so by clicking on the link in the episode notes. I appreciate your support. And thank you to everyone who's currently contributing to the show, because your generosity is what makes the podcast possible. Until next time, have a great day.